Golly. It's like the 22nd or the 23rd of August. I'm sure it's right here. No, it's the 25th. Oh my gosh. You always wonder what's appropriate to do on a Sunday morning. It's early. It's not quite 5 a.m. And I'm up doing whatever it is I do. And, I think my big epiphany about the capstone activity for school to go ahead and to go and do something for Shetland. I think it was only at the first part of this month. And so it's been a pretty busy month. Already been kind of working on, I guess you could call it the ramp up of it. Emailing back and forth with a lot of interesting people. And trying to get various pieces of this puzzle pulled together so that we can well, just so that when the time comes, it'll be I don't know what qualifies as doneness. In almost every aspect of my education, I always I don't want to say I go too far, but I tend to blow it up beyond what's asked for, and it makes it so that when I at least get all the planning done and I get it on paper, I tend to turn it in, and that tends to be either acceptable or very close to acceptable, and it's, and I find that really fascinating. It really is kind of true, I suppose, what people say that that there's those that do. It's kind of an offshoot of it, but the wording is there's those that do and those that teach. And when you're at school, you're hanging out with a lot of teachers. Now, I've got to be really honest. When I went to, in my bachelor's degree, I was surrounded by women. I'm a home economist. And these women were doers. They did it. And I keep running back into them again. There was an opportunity to go to a luncheon. It was a luncheon. That where two of my professors got awards, and they had actually, Dr. Davis, Joyce Davis, had retired some years ago. I think, in fact, that she retired probably just a handful of years after I graduated, a long time ago. Probably 15 years ago, probably at least 15 years she's been retired. But Francine Stuckey, who was my you know, they were all great mentors, all of them. They she just retired last year. And I remember talking to her once. And pondering, you know, she started with Eastern in 1970, I think it was the early 70s. You know, when she was just had her master's, and eventually got her PhD, and you know, continued teaching. She had been in charge of the Child Development Center for years and years and years, and she'd finally gotten to the point to where she wasn't in charge of that anymore. She had given that responsibility off to somebody else, and she was just doing teaching and things like that. But, you know, that's an example of a doer as opposed to just a teacher. You know, we talk about it, but never actually had to do it. It's like when people tell you how to run a daycare center, and you go, how many daycare centers have you run? They said, well, technically none. And you go, oh, okay. Well, Francine had been running a daycare center for 20 years. And, you know, at the time I was her student, she had been doing it for nearly 30. And she went on to continue to do it for, you know, nearly 40, 45. And that's an incredible track record in my mind of simply doing. So I guess that's kind of a thing that I don't understand, because most of the mentors that I've had that have been really influential in my life and helped me to become the kind of person I am have been doers. These women were all doers. Still doing. Like I said, Joyce Davis is still, she works very diligently for Habitat for Humanity, which is a wonderful, wonderful charity. Anyway, so really, what did I start with? I always do this. Anyway, oh yeah, I was talking about Western Governors University. It's only a place where you demonstrate understanding. And what I'm already planning on doing for my council activity, I'm sure that what I'm doing so far would probably qualify to take care of that. But I'm much more interested in seeing the thing through and gaining understanding and insight and, frankly, the kind of in-depth knowledge that the PhD comes from. Now, I don't have the money to do a PhD right now, but you know, this is one never closes the door on that possibility, because you just never know when. When these things are going to be, you just never know what the Lord has in store for you. How about that? It's Sunday morning. Let's be Sunday morning-ish about it. For just saying that this is a big thing. I've grown even more dependent on the Lord for so many things. Insights I need at work to accomplish the things I need to do at work. Just everything. Heck, I tend to use the heavens as an alarm clock so that I don't bother Lisa. I tend to get up before she does, sometimes a couple of hours before she does, and work on whatever presents itself, and I depend upon what's impressing itself on my mind to kind of be my guide for life, and just gonna have to become accustomed to that being the way things get done in my world. And when people say, "Well, you need to operate by some different thing," you know. Those who are the vast majority of the world who ignore the heavens, who either don't have a concept of God at all that affects them, or don't think that God behaves this way, where I find that I think he joys in the minutia of our lives, not to take away anything from our responsibility, but in the seeking of guidance and his willingness to give us guidance, not everything. But starting trying to get enough sleep, I think. When I wake up, it's gotta hit at the right moments. Anyway. And it comes out of every aspect of my life. In my job, I'll be the first one to say that I think a lot of the successes I may have at work, for understanding computer problems or being able to solve computer problems, is tied to things that just kind of pop in the head. And it's always been the way I've kind of handled that. If I've gotten any better, it's because I hope that I'm a better conduit of those kinds of insights. Supposed to catch up a little bit on things. This also has to do with that. A little bit. Not a ton. I've got a good buy on the house. People who want the house. And I want them to have it. I want it to pass. It's going to be a refinance deal. Which is fine. They have almost nothing down. I am very, what's a good word for it? I'm very cognizant of those kinds of troubles. I've got them. I've got them right now. I'll probably have to borrow money again to get, you know, a little bit of a down payment for getting something pulled together. But they're wanting to buy the house. And boy, do I want the house to be bought. Yeah. I want to move on, move forward. And that's important. I don't know if on the last recording, I could have been working on the IS director position at the community college. I could have been able, I could have been doing that at the time. Anyway, that continues to be worked on. We've been looking at houses in Ruidoso. Ruidoso is a beautiful place, and I'll be the first one to say that I felt inspired to take Lisa up there, because Lisa's very, very cautious, and the one thing you have to know about Lisa, at least the one thing I've learned that's really important for Lisa, is she's got to feel it. It's got to be, you know, she has to, faith is a tricky animal for her. And you'd think that she was from Missouri for being kind of a show me person. But that she doesn't jump off half cocked. And I know many people consider that to be a great, great asset, and I would tend to agree, but that acting on faith is so important. And almost everybody in the universe would say how reckless that is. But the really amazing things that I think our Heavenly Father has in store for us are not to be had through simple, you know, it's got to be shown to me. I've got to see all the ledger. I've got to look at all the stuff. And when you start looking at what people really want to see and what, you know, what good financial planners say you've just got to have, or else you're going to get destroyed. You're going to be a fool. Are exactly the things that God says are putting trust in Him. And it's a difficult thing. And I'm not gonna, you know, I'm certainly not gonna say anything bad about Lisa about it. Golly, you know. But yeah, some inspiration to take her up there so she could. I should say how beautiful the place it was. And I remember she had said several years ago, not too many years ago, when we were going up to go pick up one of the kids from my dad. We usually meet him halfway between us and them, like somewhere in Farmington or someplace like that. And we had decided to go, I don't remember, Lisa is Lisa's so kind to humor me. And we were looking at yurts. She even bought me a book about how to build a yurt. And I may still yet use it. I'm not going to have the money to actually buy one. I'm gonna have to make one. I don't know how that's gonna go. And we had gone up to Colorado. We decided, we go to Colorado, the place where they have yurts, at least at that time at the state parks, was in Colorado. So we went to state, I think it was someplace called Montrose, really close to, it's not too far north of Cortez, in the Durango-Cortez sort of area, just north of Farmington. We were still going to pick up our kids in Farmington. The twins, I think. It was the last big, spend a couple of weeks with Grandpa and Grandma Kay. And on our way to get to these yurts, we decided to go by the North Country, some of the really pretty parts of northern New Mexico, southern Colorado. And went up through Chama and Taos. Lisa was being really kind because, we went through the earth ships up there, and Lisa's really quite, she can get to places if you give her some time. She can, which is interesting because one would think that she would be very close-minded and to a degree she is, for just, I've got my picture of what I want, very traditional, very very nice and at times finely appointed, and yet she was, like I said, it may just be humoring me. We went up and we saw the earth ships outside of Taos, which are interesting and neat from the standpoint of look at what you can do with what would be considered junk and sweat and a sledgehammer as a tamper. We went through Pagosa Springs. Oh, Lisa loves Pagosa Springs. I think at heart, Lisa would love to be, an executive's wife. She would love to live in the really nice part of town that's manicured and a beautiful house and a beautiful, just everything beautiful. And that's there in her vision of herself and in what she'd like to be, I think. And it's been a lot for her to just kind of go through life constantly having thrown up in her face that she's not going to get any of that. Or that if she does, it's going to be way down the road or some such. And so, yeah, we went to Pecosa Springs, and she fell in love. The tree, you know, the pine trees, the shops and things. She really likes that stuff. If she can't go shopping, she loves to be a window shopper, I think. We've done that often over the years. Anyway, so when I was thinking about the thing came that said she really loved Pecosa Springs, and Ruidos was kind of a small-scale version of that. And so there was the opportunity to go and make a trip and go up and go see Ruidos. And so we did. And, of course, Lisa, it was perfect. It just rained. And the forest smells were all stirred up wonderfully. And it was just beautiful. If it looked like, you know, kind of a picturesque, dusky, sort of foggy Scotland pictures, it looked kind of like that up there, which is not horribly common as far as I'm aware. It does happen, but it's not, you know. Ruidoso is, if you want to romanticize it, it is an island, a little island of forest, surrounded by desert. Well, not completely by desert, but there's a whole lot of high desert around it. And it is, Lisa describes it as you're just going through the plains, you know, and it's kind of deserty too. And all of a sudden you turn a corner and all of a sudden you're in the forest. You know, you've gotten up high enough and everything else has got kind of an alpine feel to it. And it's, you know, this place isn't a Swiss chalet place. You know, when you say alpine, you always get a view of the Alps, and this isn't it. This is some place that begs log cabins, has a very heavy Native American influence. The Mescalero Apache Indians have, you know, there's a big reservation there. The Inn of the Mountain Gods is a Mescalero Apache enterprise. And anyway, so yeah, I don't know how you would describe it, what it harkens to, but it harkens more to log cabins and, you know, perhaps a little rustic, chic, a little bit, but I would have to say honestly that I think it's more finely appointed homes and condominiums these days than anything else. Anyway, so we went up there and Lisa fell in love with this place. Of course, it was the middle of summer. It was late July, early August that I think we took that little trip, maybe a little bit earlier. It was a good one, because I think it got Lisa a little excited about going. There's a lot of, and to make it be possible. That was the biggest thing, is to try to figure out if it was possible, cost of living sorts of issues. And I think it is possible. Especially if a job comes through, and it comes through in a good way, which I've been trying to get things pulled together so that it can come together in a good way. And I do what I typically do when I really want something, and which is keep poking at it. I call it keeping me at top of mind. That I'm developing and growing and going to bring a lot of experience and insight to the to the job. You know, I want to basically have the job when I go for the interview. But the interview is simply a formality. So that's another project still working on. We're working on the capstone activity. I'm still working on school, although work has gotten a little bit more interesting in just keeping up with school has just started. This last week was the first week of school, and everything is settling down, starting to settle down. Everybody is kind of getting into the groove of things, and I don't know if this is just a strange year, but everybody made a big deal about how we changed gears, and there has been some of that. I've been trying to gain more of an understanding of processes at the university. It's tricky because I tend to be a bit of a generalist. And always have been. And many aspects of the jobs that get done in my department are very specific to our circumstances. I think almost all businesses end up being kind of a little bit of spit and baling wire at this level in information technology. You know, a lot of things that easily could be automated if one had time or gumption or somebody who had understanding. I'm not saying I'm that person particularly. Are still done, you know, manually. There's processes that just scream out for mechanization. To say, you know, there's this long drawn out process for like getting an IP address, and it just screams out for this should be something that we can write a couple of scripts for and it would be done. You know, and then there would just be this interface, you know, where does this need to be, public or private? You know, put it here, put it there, yada, yada, yada. And over time, you know, these things get really convoluted. Because it's just, you know, there's no point reinventing the wheel. You just glom on something new on top of it. And you end up passing on a lot of craft. There's big databases upon which every organization just depends for stuff. Their antique payroll system, things like that. In fact, I think most of the college runs off the old payroll system. Integrated a long time ago. It was called Banner back then. And I think as a student, they hadn't quite gotten that. It was still a manual paper-based system when I was in college. And then it became a system called Banner. Which has since been bought out by a few companies. But it's still this thing. They said, yeah, this is it. You know, there's still COBOL running at the very base of this thing. There's still some COBOL processes involved in it. You know, it's all very, very, very interesting. And we have this fella who does that. He has a job for life because really can't be replaced. And the great part is he really doesn't want to go anywhere. And so, you know, I think almost every organization has that person that kind of just keeps that ball rolling. And anyway, so that's sort of what's happening. Anyway, so I've been working on this Ruidoso thing, and I've learned a lot being in systems, been able to mess with servers, and I was actually hired for my Linux stuff, and it's been I have been enjoying it. Now there's always the stress of I don't feel like I'm contributing as much to the gut work as I probably should, and. There's two guys that end up really being at the heart of, you know, when people think of systems and what system does, probably the next tier level up from client support. There's two guys that handle almost all of that. One of them being just kind of a procedural person that just, you know, that just spends their whole day working on just running the system that's come up to try to keep things going. Basically, fixing what breaks in the larger database and all the scripts that go with it. My supervisor, Justin, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. And I think he's got a really good take on things. And he's been wanting everybody to kind of cross-train so that, you know, if somebody leaves, things aren't left in the lurch. He's really big on documentation, which is excellent. Big on having leads and backups and people with some understanding on everything. Wants to have at least three deep, so that if something bad happens, if somebody dies or if somebody has to be gone for a few weeks, there's always somebody who can pick up the slack. And mixed results so far. And I'm hoping to become the person that he can go, okay, well, he's making a good effort. And I said, all right. And I try to sit behind people and try to learn things. And everybody's very patient with me, and I'm grateful for that. For just trying to get a sense for it. And in spite of Justin's good planning and efforts on hopefully making everybody a little bit more cognizant of what other people do, it's still falling into the whole thing of the compartmentalization. You know, we have our exchange guy, we have our kind of front-end guy, that's Mickey, although he really wants to do more, I think, but there's rarely any real opportunity for him to do that, although he got pulled into doing backups, and that's good, but that also tends to just end up being kind of a procedural type thing. Although I think I've learned, I don't do it often enough that I have a real sense for it. But I think I could muddle through doing the backups when I need to. I think almost everybody has touched it enough that they can muddle through. And he's got a procedure. It needs to get cleaned up a little bit. I seem to recall that it kind of wandered off. Procedures sometimes really sad. I can't say much because mine aren't sizably better. There's always this thing of do you do an instruction or procedure as if somebody's stupid. The technical term is a noob, you know, which is short for being a newbie, and you're going, you know, how much do you expect a newbie to actually have understanding before they get there? And I find myself not being very newbie friendly after a while. It's just like, there's going to be other people for that. I guess that's where the teaching comes in. This job position I was going for was initially supposed to be partially faculty. They didn't think there was enough work to keep that person busy, so they just said faculty. Well, they dropped the faculty part. Now it's just being the IS director, although I think that will manifest itself in teaching a couple of classes, which frankly I thought I was in a good position to do that with my background. And I have a teaching license, a teaching certificate in these things. And if push came to shove and I needed to, you know, do extra work and stuff like that, I could certainly make some kind of a deal, I suppose, to do that on the high school level. If I needed some technology teaching being done, I think it would be far more useful for, you know, when they say, well, he's got this, and you go, well, I said, I would have to say that a lot of the classes are high school students looking for something else and will be coming there in kind of a cooperative agreement to take classes at the Rio do Sul Branch Community College of Eastern. Anyway, I hadn't really given that much thought, but that might be something that was really quite useful at a certain level. And every time I think about it at all, I'd say you're really quite qualified, you're really quite... you know, as time goes on, become more and more better suited for this job I would be going for, to the point to where it's like, you're gonna pay me well, or, you know, or you're gonna have problems keeping me. So, you know, it really ends up being a question of money. Says, I don't have huge requirements. Just know that a person at my level, the median income is $100,000. And the fact that you want me to live a mountain resort job and only pay me, you know, 50-ish, you've got to understand what that means. That means if I'm living off beans and rice, I can go someplace else and not live on beans and rice. So if you want to keep me around, it's got to be better than beans and rice for me. I've got some, but I feel like that Eastern New Mexico University could be a wonderful vehicle. There's different springboards. Springboards are someplace where you go and you get some experience, so that you can have that experience on your resume, so that you can springboard to the next level. And typically you have to do that in another organization. You know, it isn't really a point of rising in the company. It can happen, but it isn't common. In fact, it's so uncommon, it's typical that they expect to recruit from the outside. Sometimes they hire people from the inside and they do really well. But other times, not so much so. So you tend to get your insights and your experience from the outside. Anyway, so as I continue to, as I think about it today and I look at it, I said, you know, I really am very well positioned for this. Not saying that somebody else might be better positioned for it, but I am well positioned as well. And yesterday morning early, looking up things on the internet, you know, there's certain loans you can get. According to certain needs, things that are difficult to do. One of Rui Doso's big troubles is that it is a very rich and poor place. There's no middle class people. And there's a program called HERO, and it's mostly to help in housing for what we consider to be vital services. And one of those vital services is a teacher. They tend to throw money at teachers to do jobs, and they will practically help you buy a house. A grant program to help entice you, especially into difficult circumstances. You know, if it's a school with a bad reputation, if it's circumstances that are somewhat less than ideal and make it difficult to get instructors at a place. There's a program that's supposed to help with that. And I might be able to take advantage of that, especially if they say, well, this is basically, you know, and Lisa will say, well, this is with an educational institution. I said, yeah. So it's community college. I said, and I really don't know. I really don't know if I can take advantage of it or not. But it would be interesting to find out. So I think we're going to look at that for an idea of what can be done. I want to be really careful, though. It's easy to fall into the trap of, well, we qualify for loans up to this size, and then tending to go toward, well, let's get a house further up the food chain. And I really would prefer not falling into that trap of being that kind of a person. And it's going to be difficult because Lisa wants the best she can get. And I'm more like, let's scale down, let's economize, let's get more of what, much closer to just what we need. And because my basic philosophy is that even if your pay isn't amazing, you can make it so, or make it more so, by just keeping your expenses down, by not getting tied up in the, you know, I need to be this, I need to do this, I need to have this and this and this. I think we're slowly getting to that point. The house we have here, when you talk to my family, they grouse and complain for how small it is. And I'm saying, what are you talking about? I said, as far as I'm aware, this is pretty spacious. I mean, it's nothing like the house we had in Tucumcari, which was just obnoxious. We had so much free space. It was just amazing. Of course, that came with heating and cooling bills and everything else. And Lisa was quite content there. You know, like I said, Lisa's a feeler, and it's all about her feelings. And the house that she grew up in, her parents' house, was just terribly cramped. When you go into it and you say, this was the house for 7 people, you look at it, and for a lot of the years that she lived in it, it was very small. And I found that to be really interesting because I think it really ends up making it really ends up making two kinds of people. You know, there's always seems to be two ways you can go with these things. Either it makes you humble and it makes you okay with kind of cramped conditions that are workable. Or it makes you into somebody that might be easily accused as a very kind of, you know, materialistic, I'll do whatever it takes to get better digs than this. And I think Lisa fell into the other category. And I'm sad to say that I think our time of being in a big place was a phase. It was a good phase for our kids while they were growing up. Now that they're growing up and growing out, it's time to start the next phase of our lives, which is a downsize. That'll help our children to launch. Anyway, it's getting laid on the recorder for a long time. I felt like I needed to. I hadn't done it in a while. And just try to catch up on what's going on. And anyway, so yeah, we're looking at smaller houses in Ruidoso in preparation for a job I may or may not get. In a beautiful place. Still working on the Shetland project, although its immediate desire is not to move there, but certainly to have the connections, which is fine. It seems consistent with what happens to me typically, with how a Heavenly Father kind of steers things. For, you know, you're gonna I turn you in a certain direction, and you're gonna be you're gonna have connections there, but not but probably not just live there. You know. And that's okay. I think it was going to be a big stretch for Lisa. But Lisa really was about, you know, I really want to get a sense for this before we go. Although she was very excited about schools, because she thought the schools would be good for the kids. Very experimental type of learning style there. Originally attracted to it by their global classroom that gives them more international experience. But that's okay. My children are already kind of doing that anyway, and I can't imagine that it's going to slow down or stop at all, because we're going to be in a very cosmopolitan place. You know, a lot of people come on vacation in Ruidoso. You know, kind of the poor man's Rocky Mountains. Very southern tip of the Rocky Mountains. And if you look at a map of the United States, you can see it there. You can see White Sands right next to it. And you can see this little patch of green. Little patch of green. And kind of like the head of a match. And beautiful, you know, and it is. It's just a little bitty dollop. You know, most of it's wilderness, which is beautiful for me. I love wildernesses. You know, I was always trying to figure out how we get closer to the Pecos wilderness, and now it's like, well, it's okay. Just go to a different wilderness. One's the White Mountain Wilderness, the other is the Capitan Mountain Wilderness. They're not huge ones by any stretch of the imagination. The Pecos Wilderness is much larger. But honestly, I never really ventured far into the Pecos Wilderness at all. In fact, I don't think I ever got to the point to where I even got up to the top of the thing. I've never gone as far as I did when I was, 14, 15, 16 years old up there. My first little backpacking adventure was in these mountains. I think they're called the Sacramento Mountains, and that's okay. You know, it was where I went to scout camp and stuff like that. It was up in the Sacramento Mountains. And that's where we might be heading here shortly. Anyway, so I'm hoping Heavenly Father is kind to us and makes this stuff kind of work. and provides us with some wonderful things, because it is, you know, like I was saying, this isn't a springboard so much as it could be a platform for doing some of the things I'd like to do, and that it would be mutually beneficial to both Eastern and to my projects, and that I can look at it that way, and I don't even have to be cagey about it. I can say this is what I'm hoping from this, that it is the springboard, it's a platform for doing some of the things that there's good infrastructure at Eastern New Mexico University. It's a good size university. It's manageable for a guy like me who doesn't like really huge things. And I wouldn't mind staying at the Eastern University system for 15 years. You know, probably past retirement. I see no pressing need to retire from something, unless it's to really take on one of my larger projects, you know, which is what usually ends up happening, is like, well, I want to really put myself toward this thing, and that would be wonderful. You know, Eastern's a great thing to funnel money through, a nice fiscal agent for some of my projects, and you go, it's so much easier when I already work for you, and it's just kind of built into the system. It certainly makes Eastern not want to get rid of you if push comes to shove and somebody says, well, we need to downsize a little bit. You know, you tend to downsize just the lecturers, you know, the people that are just teaching, as opposed to the people who do some teaching and also do some research and are bringing grant money. You don't tend to get rid of your grant money-making things because their grants tend to leave with them. Even though you say, hey, wait, that, you know, that's our money. We'll get somebody else to be in charge of that. And you go, no, it rarely happens like that. It becomes, well, you just don't have a lot of blood for it. Anyway, time to stop. It's about time for Lisa to, for the clock radio to go on, and for Lisa to be getting up. I might come back and record some more, but that's what I'm looking at. Platform as opposed to springboard. I think I've been thinking along those ways. I'm glad I've got some words for it in preparation for talking about it. When they say, we have a thing that you're just going to be using us as a springboard. And I said, I understand what you're saying, I think. But let's look at it as a platform. Anyway, so. All right, I think that's all I've got for this one. And it's been an hour. That's about right. So I will talk to you later.